Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll talk about the Kenyan experiment in devolution of power. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54. Hi, Vincent. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, and thank you. It's a pleasure.
You're very much welcome. And joining us from Nairobi is Nelly Mora Anyangorora. She's a Nairobi-based independent journalist. Nelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be in the show.
You're very much welcome. As I said, tonight we're talking about the Kenya's experiment in devolution of power. In 2010, the Kenyan government, constitution rather, reconfigured the balance of power by devolving power and responsibilities from the national government to 47 elected county governments. It also recalibrated the powers between the executive, legislature, and the judicial branches. Now, 10 years down the road, let me begin with Vincent here. Any magnificent big change you've noticed?
Well, I mean, the plan was amazing. The whole concept of devolution of power had been one of the perhaps the most desired thing by most Kenyans, and especially those who were in the opposition many years ago. They were clamoring for a system where the power would be taken away from the center so that everything doesn't have to happen from Nairobi. But over the period of the implementation of that system, there have been many, many challenges. I mean, one of the biggest challenges was that it happened in almost a sudden fashion. There hadn't been an experience in having that kind of a system where you have regional semi-autonomous governments, but that are still having a connection with the national government. So the whole concept of having elections and the legislature within a particular local area and a governor who is supposed to run his county like it was a kind of an autonomous region was a new concept. So there was a lack of the capacity and even the skills to really deliver the services that the regional governments were supposed to deliver. And also, one of the other things that became a big disappointment over this period of time is the whole question of resources and corruption. There has been evidence over and over that instead of bringing development closer to the people through the devolved system of government, many people have concluded that it also inadvertently, maybe, localized corruption, whereby monies that were meant to go into the development of this in regional entities ended up in the pockets of the politicians, those ones who are running the state, the counties, the governors, and their cronies within the system. And as a consequence, there have been there's so many other areas of the country that have performed so poorly in terms of development, despite of the fact that so much money was disbursed to these areas. And so those, particularly those two, I think have really majorly challenged the effective performance of this regional government through the devolution system.
I see. And Nelly, from your vantage point in Nairobi there, and from what you hear among the people, what difference is there between 10 years ago and now? Is there any difference?
Thank you very much. I can say maybe there's been something felt after devolution. But just to take you back, the kind of government we have, that's the two levels of government, national and 47 county government, came as a result of a brokered deal in the sense that we know that we had a very chaotic election in 2007 where there was a lot of violence. And part of the resolutions that came out from the deal that was done by the late Kofi Annan was that we have to have constitutional reform so that there is that power-sharing arrangement. And power-sharing in the sense that there is a balance of power that is spread to institutions. And it was felt that Kenya embracing a devolution or a devolved system of governance will help spread that power. And one of the key things in the Constitution is citizen engagement in governance, and this is through public participation in governance. So we are seeing that from the start of devolution, which was in 2013, March, after that election, we are seeing a lot of citizen participation. That citizen participation is grounded in the Constitution. It has not been effective from reports, but at least the citizenry has some information or knowledge of what their county governments are doing in terms of projects and budgeting and execution of the budget. We have counties like Makueni County that has done this. In fact, it is standing out as one of the model counties that has done the citizen engagement very effectively, in the sense that it is the people right from the village level who decide which program or which project they want that particular financial year. And then from that village level, then they nominate those who will sit in the sectoral committees that will determine allocation to this budget. And they have a system of following up this budget, which is also include an online platform for managing information and also the development projects.
Vincent, lately there mentions the principle, the idea of citizen engagement, participation, where the citizens are engaged in what's going on in their counties. What do you say to those who say, well, this was a way of devolving corruption?
Yes, here's the thing. The concept, the whole idea that of citizen participation is actually a noble idea, because that's where you really give people a sense of ownership. You want people to get a feel that they have an ownership in the running of their affairs. Because after all, public officials are elected by the citizenry, which means they're literally hired by the citizens. The challenge in trying to get this properly implemented is, in fact, the fact that some of the citizens may not have the sufficient information and sufficient understanding of how to hold their leaders accountable. The accountability, the impunity that we see sometimes in this regional, county governments, is just mind blowing. Because when you hear of how much money is taken by governors and some of their minions, the general public does not have a way to hold them accountable for this. The general public has not been given a system where they could perhaps impeach or participate in a process where that could lead to the impeachment of a governor, because the elected representatives of the people easily get bribed by the guys at the top in the county government. And once that has taken place, they're given certain gifts here and there, they do not hold the governor or the people who are at the top accountable. The citizens do not have the means to do that. And sometimes you feel like the citizens don't even know what they're supposed to do when they see that their county government is not delivering. It's a question of what is their level of engagement. They may participate, but at what point are they also holding these leaders accountable and challenging them to make sure that they deliver and not just spend most of their time enriching themselves? And of course, there are counties that are doing amazingly well. There's no question about it. But when you look around, there are many other counties where so much resources have been wasted. There are reports that have been released as recent as last year, or even this year, of how much money has been stolen in these counties, money that could have gone into the development of infrastructure, to health, into education. There's no question about it. Citizens do not have a way to hold their leaders accountable.
I see. Nelly, what do you say to that? Because there are some who suggest, as recently saying there, that the people, despite their intention to have them participate in their local governance, okay, can't hold their leaders accountable. Those county leaders have become like small chiefs in their counties.
Indeed, I must agree that is the situation on the ground. And when the constitution was drafted, there was the body, that is the Senate, that was given the power to overlook and oversight counties. When we look at the performance of the Senate since its inception in 2013 to date, we see that it has not really performed effectively towards that effect, that is holding counties accountable. When we look at the audited accounts, we can see that the Senate is still looking at accounts of like 4 years ago. So we see that by the time we come to where we are, most governors will get scot-free. And that delay in examining accounts, delay in really doing their role, that is oversight, because we have seen the Kenya Senate has preoccupied itself with a lot of power struggles with the National Assembly, supremacy wars, to so to speak, especially in the first county government, that is in 2013 to 2018, we saw that the two houses of parliament, the National Assembly and the Senate, were continually engaged in tussles of who to bring what bill, who is supposed to, where bills are supposed to originate, interpretation of the law. They even went up to the Supreme Court to seek interpretation of whether they should be involved in the division of revenue bill, and all this delayed or affected oversight at the county. We saw even when there was a time, sometime last year, there was a huge crisis in the health sector. It's a health sector is a devolved function, and doctors are down there too. There was a county that had even sacked its nurses and its doctors. And the Senate remains mum. It did not come out to speak and try to really give direction on how this is supposed to happen. And so because of that lack of big brother, yes, there have been gaps in terms of oversight, because even the county assemblies, they are not really structured well, and they do not have that capacity. The technical, in terms of their committees, that is like the Public Accounts Committee and even the Budget and Finance Committee, to really interrogate the budget properly so that they can come out with a report that can track the expenditure and also monitor and evaluate projects done, whether they've been effectively carried out and whether money, there's been value for money. So with all that lack of this kind of oversight organs that are provided for in the law, yes, governors, some have been getting away by misappropriating funds meant for development.
I see. Vincent, as we know, counties are not made the same. So there are those who say some counties were well positioned to do well while others were not. And despite developing part of those counties, they couldn't be uniform development, could they?
Not really. There can't be uniform development. But at the same time, you know, you can gauge how well a particular governor and his local government is doing when you check them 1 or 2 years after they've come to power. What are they doing? You don't necessarily have to compare the exact level of development with another county. I mean, I can give you an example. I come from Kisii. And when I went back to Kenya, that might have been 2019, sometime early, or somewhere 2018, 2019, I went to Kisii town, my hometown. And I have to say, I was extremely disappointed going through a very small town indeed. And you walk through the main streets of that town, and I encounter gaping potholes. You see this. The streets are so crowded, not organized at all. People are selling their wares very close to the road. They have those big gullies on the side of the road where, you know, people can even fall and hurt themselves. This town did not look like it had developed significantly. Yet the people in power had been there for a full 5 years and gotten reelected. I think perhaps when they had been they are done already maybe 2 years into the next term. And I looked around, I said, so what has really changed in the last 5 years? Yet I'm aware that some of those members of that county government have become extremely wealthy. Some are putting up massive, beautiful hotels, which don't even have a nice road leading to that hotel. Now, compare that with Kisumu County, where I went to. Kisumu is a city, it's a bigger town, but I could see a difference. I could see that I was wowed. I arrived in Kisumu and I was like, wow, this is development. That is the county that is the governor of that county is Professor Anyang' Nyong'o, the father of Lupita Nyong'o. I have to say, despite of many other problems they may be having and challenges, my first impression was that this governor has been doing something. Kisumu looks extremely different than it was the last time I visited. So I think you have to look at what is happening actually on the ground. You look at the roads, look at the look of the town, how clean is it looking, how organized is it looking, how tarmacked are roads, how what's coming up in terms of development, what buildings are we seeing, and then how are people doing in the surrounding areas, how are the people of the county generally doing in terms of their benefiting from their agricultural produce and getting the right tools and resources in order to develop themselves. That is, for me, how I think people have to gauge how well every county is doing and each governor and their elected members are doing.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. Tonight we are discussing the Kenyan experiment in devolution of power to counties. And our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, and Nelly Mora Nyangorora, a Kenyan independent journalist who's joining us from Nairobi. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga. Nelly, some people have said Kenya went the reverse direction. As you explained earlier on, this was a result of what happened in 2007 and how they thought this would reconcile the people and give people power to participate in their politics. But as you know, in the neighboring Tanzania, Nyerere made sure that everything is centralized and brought together all the small ethnic groups. Uganda had kingdoms. Actually, they had a system of devolution before because they had kingdoms. And then after independence, they brought them together and wanted to have a centralized system. So what do you think, how do you compare this experiment of devolution? Could it spread to the others or maybe, I don't know, what do you think?
In my view, devolution can work. And going back to what Vincent talks about Kisi, comparing Kisi and Kisumu, I feel it would be unfair to do this because prior to devolution, we had counties, yes, that were managed by municipalities. And Kisumu being one of the major towns, it was the third largest town, it was then the third largest town in the country, then it benefited. And it was also elevated to city status. So the national government kind of put more resources in revamping the roads there and doing the, just making sure that at least it measured to the city status. So to compare it to Kisi at the devolution level right now would be unfair because some counties were way ahead of others by the time we moved into the devolved system of government. And then we did have the transition authority. The transition authority was supposed to manage the transition from a unitary state to a devolved system of government. That transition authority did not really work or rather streamline how the transition would take place. So we find that there are counties that are still lagging behind because, one, their assets are still not yet transferred. And then we also have functions that have devolved, like agriculture. Most of the infrastructural development being undertaken by the national government. The national government under that sector, which is agriculture, it forms an authority whose functions overlap what the county government are supposed to do. And when it comes to resource allocation, we find that 80% of money goes to the authority as opposed to county government. That is the agricultural, fisheries, and food authority. So So in this scenario, we find that there's an encroachment of functions by the national government of county function. So this makes counties not function effectively as envisaged in the constitution, and it has been a source of conflict. And being a source of conflict, it means then that sector is affected. But going forward, it will be nice, to ensure that functions that are completely devolved or like is a shared function, because agriculture, the national government was just supposed to remain with policy formulation, and the rest be left to the counties. And we see that because of that overlap and conflict, there are services like extension services which are hampered, because it's not clear who's supposed to do extension services. And if it is counties, it's not given the resources to do this. We have a treasury that is not independent of government. So the treasury keeps on delaying disbursement of funds to counties. Let's take this year, for example. There was a long-running tussle over the division of revenue bill. This division of revenue bill determines how much goes to counties and how much remains in the national government. The Constitution had provided a review of the formula every 5 years. That came, that review was done last year and tabled in the Senate. Senate delayed discussing the review formula and decided to discuss it this year. This coincided with the scrutiny of the budget. And because the parameters were controversial, the formula focused on population as one of the key parameters to determine how much each county should get. Then that delayed disbursement of funds. And that disbursement, that continued delay of disbursement, has seen many counties lag behind in terms of project implementation and derailing even services like just everyday services, which include even recurrent services, that is now the staff of the counties being delayed, salaries being delayed for months, and all this has impacted negatively on devolution. So my view is, if devolution works according to how it was envisaged, and there is goodwill, because it's the goodwill that seems to be lacking, then devolution is a form of government that can be successful. But because there are also other factors like interest by sitting by government, some governments like the national government, maybe they feel this power is going too much to the counties and the rest of the tussle for resources, then devolution is going to be a mirage, effective devolution.
Vincent, what do you say to that? Because definitely there is friction, there is contestation as far as central government and the counties are concerned.
I agree with several points that Nelly makes, including, she corrects me on the situation, the difference between, say, Kisumu and the Kisii. And that is okay because, yes, there are other city towns and counties that have had advantages way before the devolution. And there are others that have performed well and received praise, for example, like Machakos under Governor Mutua, with so many other issues, but to some degree there was a marked change in how that Machakos County looks like. But nevertheless, I do see what Nelly has just mentioned as the real challenge in implementation of an effective devolved system, and a lesson that could be learned by the neighboring countries. It is an awesome system. It is the best system. The decentralizing of power and development is amazing. That is how the Western countries have developed. And even here, we do have poorer counties or poorer states and richer states. But the fact is that because of the way it was put together, the men and women who are crafting this didn't see through into the future, into all the little issues that might arise when it comes to actual implementation. And that's why we're having this confusion. Who's power, who goes up to where? What is the role of senators? What is the true role of senators in terms of counties? What is the role of members of parliament? Where does the member of parliament's role end? Where does the member of parliament and the senator's role converge? And how do the member of parliament and senator and governor all kind of work together in ensuring that the system is functioning? So the lesson I think here is that the system was quickly implemented to solve a political problem that the country was facing at that time. And of course, people were excited. It was desirable because it was one way of bringing development to the people, bringing power closer to the people and removing that autocratic power system. But it needs to be rejigged a little bit. They're needed, and it's been 10 years now. That should have been happening. The process should have been on how to streamline this. So the lessons that the neighbors could learn from this is that work at it, look at all the scenarios, and make it workable. Because I think the Kenyan system almost put obstacles in the way of the successful implementation without realizing it was not intentional. But I think that what has come out very clearly over this time, and as Nelly mentioned, that tug of war between counties and the central government and the national government, and of course between all the other elected leaders, that is going to be a big challenge in properly and effectively implementing the devolved system.
Briefly, we are running out of time. Briefly, beginning with you, Nelly. At least this devolution power, do you think, as far as the people are concerned, did it at least ease the political tensions? In the next election or subsequent elections, things should be smoother.
We are now at the point where, okay, there's not been an audit of the constitution to see the gap, but the powers that be now are working on a document called the Building Bridges Initiative. And in that Building Bridges Initiative, they are trying to expand government so that there is that continued power sharing. And it is thought that with the BBI's approval, then we are going to address the issue of winner take it all and ensure that there's equity in development, there's inclusivity, which the devolution was trying to achieve, and there's also citizen engagement in governance.
I see.
That remains to be seen if it will work.
Vincent, 10 seconds.
Yes, indeed. I think the BBI is receiving some challenges from those who are opposed to it. But the Building Bridges Initiative, I think, seeks to correct some of the problems. But also the fact that citizens and the leaders were not completely satisfied with how much power has been devolved. They still want more devolution in the power structure. And so that's why we're seeing the BBI. It addresses the issue. Because when it comes to the current system, remember the last election was held under the devolved government, and we almost had another situation. We came closer to serious violence. So I think there needs still to be a way to fix this and reassure the citizens that power belongs to them, and so they don't need to be too excited and too agitated, especially around election time.
I see. Unfortunately, we're out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Macori, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54. And thanks to Nela Mora Nyangorora, a Kenyan-based independent journalist who joined us from Nairobi. Guys, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's been a delight. Thank you.
Yes, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at voanews.com, click on programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
In the news, moderator Shayna Estulin and a panel of experts as they analyze the top stories of the week including drug company Moderna says its vaccine appears to be 94.5% effective against COVID-19, a claim similar to Pfizer's. Both companies are on track to seek permission for emergency use in the U.S. Issues in the news this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.